On this episode of The Playbook, I have David Sharfman, owner of Just the Cheese, and we're going to talk about the two golden rules of running a business, and you need to operate it like you're going to run it forever. Join me for all of this and more on The Playbook.
This is Entrepreneurs The Playbook, where each week I bring you some of the greatest athletes, celebrities, and entrepreneurs to talk about their personal and professional playbook to success and what made them champions on the field and in the boardroom. I'm your host, David Meltzer.
This is Dave Meltzer with Entrepreneurs The Playbook, and I have another David. I don't know what it is about that name. They don't name kids David anymore, but they must have used to name them David because I have David Sharfman. He is the owner, general manager at Just the Cheese, and I got so many great things to talk about the cheese. David, welcome to The Playbook.
Thanks for having me, other David.
Yeah, right on. I love, you know, kids today. I go in those classes, and there's not one kid named David, but I'm interviewing at least two or three Davids a week, so it makes me feel really good.
Well, God willing, you're doing this long enough that when the generations turn over, you're going to have some kid with a hashtag in your interviews, and you're just going to be like, how do you pronounce that?
That's it, man. Well, you know, I do a lot in Kenya. I know you've traveled the world yourself, and specifically in the cheese industry as well. But one of my objectives is building these villages. As the kids are born, I want to make such a great impact that I, you know, have a whole village of Davids. You know, everyone wants to name their kid David. Anyway, your journey's been interesting. What I really find intriguing about your journey to build, you know, and you guys are killing it right now, Just the Cheese, is that a lot of guys move like me into eclectic industries and backdrops with their skills and capabilities. Your career, you know, has a lot to do with cheese, and you're from Wisconsin. So, you know, obviously you must be a Green Bay cheese head yourself. Is that true?
Yes, sir.
Green Bay Packer fan by chance?
It's a good guess. It's a good guess. Okay. I think they'd throw me out of the state and the family would lose the cheese making license if any of us declared otherwise.
I imagine so. Well, you know, taking in that account, you know, there's probably so many kids that grew up with you that thought about being or are in the cheese business. And it's probably not as easy as everybody thinks just to kind of get into the business of your own state and of the industry and culture. You know, you've had throughout the world experiences and challenges. You know, what was your initial perception of going into the cheese business, you know, coming from where you do?
So initially I fought it tooth and nail. You know, there's sort of two ways that when you're part of a small business family or family business, it's really two ends of the spectrum. Either you're in it or you're like, no, never again. I'm going to do something completely different. And starting out was definitely the latter. I was like, no. I want to do my own thing. Used it as a learning opportunity, but absolutely looked at it as like, this is not going to be my career. This is not going to be my industry. That's not to say that like there was anything wrong with it. It was like, no, I want to do my own thing. So I kind of took the long road back. I played poker professionally for a few years. I traveled overseas. I started some other businesses in Southeast Asia. And it wasn't until it happened pretty organically. A business partner and I were looking into just new business ideas. And we looked at we were expats living in China at the time, and we both traveled a lot. And one of the things you miss is like they don't have good cheese in Southeast Asia. It's just not a part of the culture or the diet. We knew enough people that felt the same way that were like, well, could you make cheese in Asia? And not, and, you know, is that a thing? So we looked into it, and that's kind of how I came back to it. So, of course, I used my dad as a great resource, people on his team, his contacts in the industry. And that's kind of how I got back into it. I'd be lying if I said I was trying to get back into it again. It was just more of a industry agnostic. This is a good idea. It could have been fertilizer for all I care. If it was a good idea, I'm enough of a nerd about business that if it's a good business idea, I'm going to pursue it because that's where the rush is being successful. And as an aside, I think a lot of people get trapped by the idea of if they're going to start a business, it has to be a cool cocktail party business. Oh, I want to tell someone that my job is cool. And the reality is there's probably better ideas in industries people haven't heard of. So that's really how I got into the cheese business. You know, I worked in the factory as a kid. I did sales and demos and product development, but it wasn't until I came back on my own volition that I really was like, okay, this is going to work.
Well, I love talking to ex-professional poker players and poker players in general, because there's so many times in business I feel like people are playing poker, whether they have to or not. And there's a lot of similarities and synergistic things about the game of poker and professional poker in negotiating and building a business. What are some of the skill sets that you still utilize from your poker days?
So I want to make one distinction. When I say professional, it means that I played it without having to have another job. That's how I supported myself. I have friends and acquaintances who I would consider real professionals who are superfluously wealthy because they're that good and better than me. So
I've had those guys on my podcast, so we'll distinguish that right here.
Yeah, just want to make sure that's clear. I'm not one of them. But I think the most common is just sort of practical objectivity and risk assessment. When you look at almost any decision, you have to use the information available to you. A lot of people beat themselves up over hindsight because it's 2020. It's like, well, if only I did X, Y, Z. It's like, well, you use the information available to you at the time. So at the time, was it the right decision? And that's what you have to judge yourself on. It might not work out correctly. And I've lost tons of money in poker making the right decision. And I've also won lots of money making the wrong decision. That's just how the game was played. So I think having that mindset and being comfortable with those situations that you do the best you can, it's never going to be perfect. And at the end of the day, there's just some luck to it as well.
And do you feel that in business as well, you can make bad decisions and they turn out great? And, you know, especially considering what's going on right now, I see a lot of people that some of the bad business decisions they made have really turned out to be a benefit now. And other people have made every logical decision with multi-billion dollar businesses. And in every context of reality, you know, a billionaire who owns hospitality, casinos, teams, leagues, and stadiums, in what world would they ever think that every single portion of their multi-billion dollar empire would close down on a day's notice?
Here's a great example of that. In the industries you mentioned, the gentleman who purchased the Houston Rockets a year ago, Tillman Fertitta.
Yeah, he wrote my forward to my book, so that's it. Yeah,
right, and I was like, man, that's really prescient, because that's exactly what I was thinking. I was like, man, that would suck. Damn, that would be terrible. Now, granted, I think he'll be okay. It's still a good asset to hold, but yeah, you do everything correctly. You lever up at just the right times on the right industries and the right revenue streams, and then, wait, they all disappeared?
Yeah. Well, I think it's so funny because someone asked me on an interview that I was on, and like, so they know Tillman and I are friends, and said, so you think Tillman will survive? And I never thought, I'm like, survive? I go, are you kidding? He goes, you think he'll be able to hold on to the team? And I'm thinking, in what world 12 weeks ago, if I asked Tillman if he would hang on to the team, would there even be an inkling of anyone in the world that'd be interested in that question, right? It's absolutely crazy. Well,
yeah, and it's one of those where, like you said, you could make all the right decisions, and sometimes it doesn't matter. And he could have made the totally wrong decision. Like, if you rewind to when he's thinking of purchasing it, if he hadn't, or if, you know, the guy who came in second place bidding is probably like, oh, thank God. But up until a few months ago, he's kicking himself.
Oh, yeah. Well, I can't tell you how many people I've been with, you know, Jerry Jones and that family with the decisions when I was with Lee Steinberg, and in the inner circle of the conversations that went on from the decisions that he made you know, to buy the team, to build the team, the stadium, to the Star, which is the practice facility. And, you know, I mean, nobody realizes, you know, they just think that these decisions are easier the bigger you get, that you have no risk at all. You know, people have risk at all. And no matter how big they are, there's always a chance of losing it all.
And I have, you know, a less glamorous example was for my own business. I quit my consulting job in February of 2018, 60 days after we launched Just the Cheese. And a few months later, we're back in Wisconsin. My wife and I moved back. We're settled in. And we're looking at, hey, if we grow the way we think we're going to grow, we're going to need to expand our facility. And in hindsight, it's like, well, of course you would. You were growing so fast. You needed it. It was just SBA money. It was cheap debt. It's just a, you know, no big deal. But, and in hindsight, that's still true. It's like, oh, well, yeah, of course you had to do that. But at the time, you're like, well, are we going to go draw down $1.4 million and buy new ovens and build out the factory for something that's only been selling for 5 months? I mean, thank God we did.
Right.
That could have broken the other way real fast. And those are the risks you take. And you only hope that they look simple in hindsight.
Speaking of which, you know, we've all experienced those lessons and failures when things do break the other way. What's your philosophy about those mistakes and lessons and what other people might, you know, define as a failure?
So I actually have a tattoo on my right shoulder that essentially says, you know, learn from your mistakes. So like mistakes, they're just learning opportunities. And as bad as it feels when you fail and as terrible as some of those decisions are to make, the whole point is you have to take something away from it and make it a learning experience. So you hopefully don't do it again. If you look at them as, you know, I feel like people put too much shame into mistakes. If you make a mistake, oh, I'm ashamed. It was terrible. It's like, and it sort of goes back to what we were talking about a few minutes ago. Did you make the right decision at the time based on the right information, based on as much as you could? Okay, it failed. Okay, it sucks. No question. So what did you learn from it? How are you going to use that to make yourself better or to avoid a similar failure in the future? If you just want to have self-pity and be ashamed of yourself, one, don't get into entrepreneurship. And two, it's just not a healthy way to view the world. Life's too short to sort of wallow on those failures.
It's funny that you say view the world. I just had done a training on time management, and one of the questions that someone asked was about how do you make decisions that are going to be seen negatively in the public eye? And I'm thinking to myself, this idea of there is a public eye, number one, and two, that anybody gives a shit, is beyond me at my age and experience right now. And that to the aspect that the most public of all people still don't even hit the cusp of what I would consider a public eye, you know, right. And like, who, let alone people don't care. They just don't know. And yet I find, you know, these startup entrepreneurs that, you know, may have, you know, as in your journey, tried to start a cheese, you know, manufacturer in the Philippines or other places around the world that may or may not have worked out the way that you thought. But in like in your mind, and I remember being a young entrepreneur, like the whole world knows that I didn't do it right. The whole world is looking, like literally they're just waiting on pins and needles for the first time they see me to go, hey, what happened to you, buddy? And meanwhile, when I lost over $100 million, went bankrupt, et cetera, I still, and like I make it pretty public to help people learn from my mistakes and feel comfortable and illuminate. I'm always amazed how like people are like, well, you know, guy like you, you've never failed. And I'm thinking, I have tried and spent tons of money trying to brand myself as an idiot, you know, someone that's learned lessons. I spent all this money to brand myself and still you have people like, oh yeah, you're Midas, man. Everything in your life is easy. And I was like, where is this public eye? Did you have that same pressure, you know, through the journey of all the different missteps and mistakes and lessons that you've learned of, you know, feeling pressure about, you know, the public eye or what other people would consider you and how you are a business person?
So, yes and no. I've been blessed with this kind of an attitude of, hey, I'm going to be myself no matter what. And I think I'm a pretty kind, outgoing, nice person. Nobody is popular with everybody. You can't win them all. So as long as I'm comfortable with who I am and what I'm doing and how I treat people, it's like, hey, the rest, if you don't like that, you can kick rocks. On the business side, I think when I had to shut the Philippines business down, that was like my first really big failure. And part of it was inexperience. And just, I was a young man and my first business had been a success. So I didn't really know what that felt like. And when I had to call each of my investors and tell them, hey, you're only going to get half your money back. Because if I go through with this, you're going to get zero. And it was just, it's such an odd conversation to have of like, yeah, you know, that idea that I was telling you was a great idea. It would be worth millions of dollars. And that I've been working for 2 years on. I'm not even going to do it. I'm just going to give you half your money back instead. You know, categorically a failure. Just, hey, I failed. I lost half your money. And it was sort of an ego hit that I really cared what these men thought of me. I didn't want them to view me as a failure. And so those conversations were really terrifying. And so it wasn't so much of I was worried about what the world would think. It was much more specific as these people who I respected and wanted their respect would no longer reciprocate that. You know, through those conversations that were very difficult, working through those, and at the end of which dealing with sort of the stages of grief, they're angry, they're in denial, they're asking questions, they're questioning me. But at the end of them, I could call any of them today and just shoot the shit. I'm still friends with all of them. I don't want to say totally overblown in my mind, but it also was a good motivator to like, hey, don't make those same mistakes again. Go learn more, go prepare better so you don't have to do this again. And that was a lot, that just made things a lot easier.
You know, talking about accountability of investors, you know, taking on investment as I did, you know, as a young business person, because so many people believe in us. And, you know, even at that time, I remember telling some people, look, don't invest, you know, and they come on, you're never letting me in, you know, and it is one thing that, you know, I stray away from of taking personal investment in my business, is that feeling that no matter what, the blame, shame, and justification is so great within an investor, you know, and when things go bad, you'll see this time around when the economy pulls, I'll love to watch the guy who, you know, he's lost millions of dollars in his home and his business and all these things, but may have made a $10,000 investment with a friend like you, and loses that. And then what he'll do is use that story to say, oh yeah, you know, that David Sharpman, man, he stole my money. I invested in his company and I lost everything because of it. I will tell you, that was the one ego processing that was most difficult for me. And still is, that there's still like high school buddies who like, I bent over backwards. I helped, I did all these things. And yet, you know, I'll hear through, oh yeah, I heard you lost all his money. I'm like, I lost all. And yet people will do that. And I have spent years of therapy, self-analysis to forgive myself. And have you had or experienced that on the investment side where you are just the victim of blame, shame, and justification?
So I've been really lucky that I have not. And especially in my second business that didn't go well, I actually, two of the three investors I told, I don't want to take your money. I actively were like, they were classmates of mine at business school. And I told both of them, I was like, I don't want the money. And one in particular, one was more well off than the other. So the third guy in, I was like, I don't want to take this. I don't want you to invest because you'll never see this again. On a good day, a startup has a 5% chance of not failing completely in the first year.
Right.
So, hey, okay, 1 in 20, you might have a prayer in 12 months. And he was insistent. And I said, and it's like, all right, I did my best to sell you on not doing this. So we all kind of knew it was a Hail Mary play, and that was all kind of exciting and fun, and we went for it. Didn't work. I have beers with him. I was going to stand in his wedding. Yeah. So hasn't been an issue.
That's awesome. All right, last question. You know, as a small business owner and someone who, you guys are killing it, like I said, growing exponentially, like you said, you expanded at the right time, prepared for what hopefully will be a springboard to even greater success with a quality product that is, you know, may not be needed as much in Asia, but, you know, has always been a cornerstone of our staple here in the United States. What do you think the most difficult part about being a small business owner is?
I was just talking the other day to a friend of mine who started his first business. And I always try to explain, hey, make sure you celebrate the highs, but not so much that they kind of lift you off the ground, and make sure you really understand the lows, but without making sure they hold you back and hold you down. It's really just trying to stay on as even a keel as you can, because you're going to live and breathe your business if you're doing it right. And there's lots of bad news and lots of good news and lots of ups and lots of downs. And the best thing you can do for yourself is just try to hold that middle of like, yep, this is, don't, if something great happens, make sure you enjoy it, because it's part of the fun. If something terrible happens, don't ignore it, because you need to learn, but just don't let it pull you up and down one way or another. And then the only other piece of advice was from my dad, is run the business and make your decisions like you're going to run it forever. A lot of people that it never really occurred to me to think of it like that, but he's absolutely right that you come upon lots of decisions where if all you're thinking about is, I want to make an exit in 3 years, you're probably going to do something stupid.
Like poker.
Right. It's like, oh, well, I only want to play for one. I have to make $1,000 in 1 hour. It's like, okay, you're going to do something dumb in this hour.
Exactly.
You know, if everything goes right, hooray. But at least that way, you're always taking the long view. What is going to make the business strong and durable and can get through crazy times like this? I don't have, oh my God, I have to double my store count this year because I said I would in January. It's like, well, I'm actually going to be pretty close to it, but I'm not going to cut price. I'm not going to be aggressive with promotion. It's like, hey, it has to be profitable, has to make sense. I plan for the business to be around for a long, long time. If some CPG company wants to come knock on my door and see what it would take to get me to fork it over, I'd love to talk to them. I really would. But if they don't, I'm happy as a clam running this until I decide not to.
I love that. I'm going to use and add, you tell your father that to my small business caveat of always, you know, make sure that you stay in business. I'm going to add, make sure you stay in business and you run it like you want to run it forever. And as far as CPG businesses, you know, I think the Crafts and the Hunts have spent all their money on Mahomes, which is going to be
arguably a good investment. Pretty good.
arguably, but the Crafts still have their money, so you never know, right? Anyway, there's some great valuable lessons. You're running a great business. I love the strategy, the philosophy, and the journey that you've been through. Of course, I love the name David. It means beloved, and this is a man who is beloved to cheese, just the cheese. David Sharpman, welcome, and thank you for joining David Meltzer here on Entrepreneurs, The Playbook.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of The Playbook as much as me. On a personal note, I just wanted to thank everyone for making The Playbook such a success. Don't forget to continue it by sharing, subscribing, and listening to your favorite episodes. This is Dave Meltzer with The Playbook.